let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art.
Kia ora, and welcome to Kick Arts, proudly brought to you this August by the Dolphin Theatre. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz or find us on Spotify. On the show tonight, Adam and I are talking theatre and music. But to kick things off, here is Kiwi musician Alyssa Callender with their latest track, Treat a Girl Right.
I'm 3 years older and the firstborn daughter, so it's my job to teach you. When you're sick to your stomachs, when you'll know your love, yeah, be the guy she won't wanna lose. Cause if you ever learn something from me, your words still have power. Respect is something to be earned. So just give her your jacket. Do things without her asking. Buy her flowers out of blue.
There we go. I love new hatchlings. I'm sure our listeners are sick of hearing it, but really helps me trying to find Kiwi music. But what we would really love is for people to send us an email at info@kickarts.org.nz. Tell on your neighbour that's keeping you awake playing the drums or something like that, because it might be that they've got a really good band.
Yeah, maybe so, maybe so.
Maybe so. So, Adam, what have you been up to this week?
Oh, my God. Well, for once, Emma, I've actually been seeing shows, which doesn't happen very often. So, just on Friday, I was over at the Rose Centre in Belmont, and I saw The 39 Steps.
Which was Company Theatre.
Yeah, that was Company Theatre, and that was pretty good. And then just last night, I was over at the Q Theatre for Tiptronic Production Geomatics, which, as always, with Quinn, that was always a stellar of a show. Yeah. What about you? What you been up to?
Well, we had our show this week, so we had Expect the Unexpected 3.0 Girl Power happening at the Pump House. Went really well. It's just such a horrible time of year to be doing a show. So many of, like, I had 21 young people in it, aged between 12 and 18, and the amount of them just in the last week that got that stupid flu that's going around every school at the moment. And you can probably hear from my voice that I've got a touch of it too. So if I start coughing, I'm apologising for that now. But we've got a really full studio. Six people plus eight.
So eight of us.
Yeah. So, should we introduce who we've got with us?
We should.
I'm looking at, because I'll take a photo later and put it up, but directly ahead of me, he's not in the corner because he's a dunce, but welcome to the show, Marshall.
Kia ora, thanks for having me back.
People will understand why we said that later.
Yes.
And you've brought along your fantastic producer, Charlie.
Yes.
Kia ora koutou.
Kia ora. And then we've got this new fantastic, well, they're not new, they're kind of, well, we're going to hear how long.
Been around for a little bit.
Been around for a little bit, but it's borderline. So going down the row, we've got Matthew, Jackson, Ben and Max.
Well done. That was amazing.
Yeah, I'm just trying, you know, when there's four people.
You're trying really hard to get all the names.
And you've got to remember the names right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I didn't, so that's great.
Cool. So, Jackson, because you were just talking, I'll let you lean into that Mr. Green mic.
Sure.
First of all, tell us, how did borderline happen?
It's an amazing question. Well, me and Matt met in primary school. We went to school together. We grew up just down the street from each other. We've been playing in bands since we were like 7 or 8. And then in high school, we met Ben, and we needed a singer. So Ben joined. And then at the start of uni, we met Max, and Max jumped on bass, and it's been the four of us ever since. So, yeah.
And how long ago was that?
With this four of us, it's been about 2 years.
I've known them for far too long. Try not to think about it.
But obviously it works. If it's been a thing for a while, yeah, it obviously works, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're just like best friends. Like, we started doing the music thing just as a hobby. And now somehow it's become our job, so we're grateful for it. But we love each other. We're a little family that plays music. It's great.
Very cool. Now, Jackson, I've got to ask about the elephant in the room. Does your girlfriend appreciate your music?
Yeah, I'm currently wearing an I Love My Girlfriend t-shirt, which I got. Actually, I got this in London. I got a matching one for her, except not I Love My Girlfriend, it was I Love My Boyfriend. Yeah, she's super supportive. She's, you know, she comes along to all the shows, and yeah, it's great to have such a supportive partner.
Maybe it could be a thing for a future music video. You could all wear ones that say "I love my band member" or "I love Borderline." Or
that is a fantastic idea.
It could be new merch.
Look out for it. It's going to come.
Yeah,
someone write that down.
Cool. All right, we're going to come back to you guys. Decadence.
Yes.
Tell us about it, Marshall.
Okay, so my previous show was called Build Ups, which was kind of about the fall of capitalism and we need to build something new, blah, blah, blah. Decadence is capitalism has won. It's over, so we're just going to go down with the ship. We're going to spend all the money that we have, even though we don't have that much, and it's over.
I thought this was like a comedy type
thing. It's so funny.
It sounds really depressing.
That's what I'm thinking.
So it's a sketch comedy show, so that's more kind of the theme of the show, and then all of the sketches kind of fall under that theme. So, for example, the Briscoes lady is in there.
Oh, do you play her?
I play her. She's perfect.
Can you give us her voice?
Sure. At Briscoes, we've got all kinds of incredible deals for your manky little home.
Cool. Okay.
There's a sketch about like password sharing. I was just finishing up a sketch today about
Trump.
No, there's no Trump. I did have a Trump joke in like a previous show, and it just felt like I don't want to do this, and people don't want to hear it. So let's get rid of that. But no, I was just finishing up a sketch today about going to the doctor about gaining weight, but you're like, who did this? Like, it wasn't me that gained weight, you know, and you're accusing someone else of it. Yeah.
It was the person that cooked the food well.
It was the person, yeah, it wasn't me. Certainly wasn't I that ate all the food. So it's still very silly, and even though the, like, themes of it are dark, it's a silly fun time.
Cool. All right. Crossing back over to Borderline, who's going to answer this question? I think the silent man at the end of the row that hasn't said anything yet can answer this one.
All right.
So have you guys got gigs coming up?
We do, yeah. We're going on tour in about a week.
Oh,
yeah. We've just released our
national
EP.
Tour.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, Australia as well.
Oh, how exciting!
Yeah. We can't wait. Since our EP Chrysalis has come out, we're going on tour to celebrate that, and we're doing our first show in Tauranga on Friday.
Wow. Okay. So, Tauranga, and then where to?
Then Wellington, Auckland, Christchurch. Is that the right order?
That is the right order.
And then Sydney, and then Melbourne.
And Brisbane.
We're playing in Brisbane for Big Sound.
That is so cool. So that's a festival?
Yep.
So is playing in a festival something that you've... Let's go to you, young Mergs. is playing in a festival something you normally do, or do you normally do like a standalone?
We definitely do a lot of standalone shows, but we have performed in a few festivals. I mean, we've done Sound Splash and Rhythm and Vines. But yeah, I mean, different ball game to a different ball game to the single shows. But it's all, you know, all stuff we do.
Yeah, and when you're playing in a, like, what's the what's the challenge, say, playing in a festival to playing your own solo show?
Oh.
There we go. We've got a hand up going.
It's always like a bit of a dice roll because you don't know how many people there are there to see you or just have nothing else better to do. Being like a small New Zealand artist, you know, it kind of happens and you get a bit nervous. You don't know how many people are going to show up to your stage and your time slot and who's playing on another stage that might take all of the, you know, the hype at that time. But it's always fun and it always like ends up being better than we thought it was going to be. So I think we're on a good track with the festival gigs. Mm. They're going great so far.
And is this your first time overseas as a band?
No. We've spent most of the year overseas. So we went to the US and we did a small North American tour in March. And then I think we came back here for a month or so. And then we went to the UK and we played a festival over there and then a headline show in London. And then spent a day in Paris and Berlin and then more Australia stuff. And so, it's been a wild first half of the year.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, so when you say a small New Zealand band and then you say, but we've just been to America and the UK, I kind of go, how is that a small New Zealand band?
It's kind of gotten crazy in the past year. Like, the last time we played a festival was RMV right at the start of the year.
Yeah.
And the past, like, you know, 6 or 7 months is the time that it's really sort of picked up for us and things have started happening. So hopefully next year the festivals we won't be so nervous for.
Yeah.
But in our past experience, we've been a little trembly. Mm. But, we've been jet-setting a bit. And
that's amazing.
It's been great.
Yeah.
We get to travel. We're all best mates. So it's kind of just living the dream right now.
Marshall, have you travelled your shows?
Oh, yeah. So the exotic land of Wellington was the most recent one. I was just saying before Whangarei.
Ooh. At 6... I want to say 161 or something. Like, where did you play in Whangarei? 116, that's
yes,
it.
Yes. No, but I mean, I did all the festivals previously when I lived in Canada. I did all the sort of North American festivals. And next year, I'll be taking it to San Diego, Hollywood, and possibly, they said Mexico. They just threw in Mexico. They were like, we'll give you that as well.
Well, I suppose if you're on that side of the world.
Yeah, why not?
Jump a border.
On.
Just jump that border.
I have a very twistable arm, so.
Fair enough. Okay, my train of thought just went out the door. So, boys, tell us about, we're going to play one of your songs in a moment. What's the first one we're playing?
New Romance.
Okay, so tell us about your process. Who writes your music?
We all write the songs together. We all do, like, odd bits and bobs. Most of the time we'll do our own part and then sort of, you know, all fight on other parts and see who can get the most. We're pretty good, generally. We just all collaborate and do all of it. But we wrote this one together, just the four of us, in this guy's basement, Jackson, the tall one.
Yeah.
And it came together really quick, and it's one of our favorites. And it's one of our favorite songs, and the music video is great too, but unfortunately we can see it and you can't right now.
Well, we can check it out on your stuff, or we can post it later as well on socials. But let's have a listen to it, eh? So this is New Romance.
Kissed a boy. Should this be a conversation we try to avoid? I've got no plans, we're just talking tonight. Sitting on lawn chairs in a living room with just TV light. You talk to me like I'm someone else, and I just can't figure it out. Embarrassing storytelling all night. I look at you and I forget what was on my mind. So what if it's a new romance? You don't have to be scared, I understand. Oh, we could have a new romance. It's called a 2-1. Just sleep, my love, and think about it. She's 19, never kissed a boy, and it's awfully quiet down here on the floor.
I can't get you out of my head. All I can hear is your breath. We're getting close, and there's hope for something more. And I will stay the whole night. You got a power to stop time. Darling, I'm begging, tell me to stay on go. Cause I look at you and my God, it's so hard to know. So what if it's a new romance? You don't have to be scared of understand. Oh, we could have a new romance. It's called a
very cool. I was kind of having a wee jiggle in my chair carefully because my chair's a bit dodgy tonight. I feel like I could fall off at any minute. But anyway, I was just saying, I really feel that the meter of a good song is when someone hears it for the first time and kind of catches the motif or the chorus moment and can sing along. So, yay!
Thank you so much. We've done our job quite well then.
Yeah, and I agree that it's a really cool music video. So who plans what the music video is going to look like? How does that work?
We work with an amazing director, a guy called Tom Groot, who is from here.
Yeah, we know Tom.
Yeah, he's amazing. So yeah, he's done this whole project with us, and it's very collaborative, you know. We kind of have ideas and what the songs feel like visually to us, but we can't really express that.
Tell the Pinterest story. This one's great.
Yeah, so yeah. We'll put together like a Pinterest board of like the vibe and the mood and stuff, and then we'll send that to Tom. And then, so we sent one off for one of the other songs.
This was the first thing we'd done with them. Like, we hadn't worked with them yet.
Yeah. But. And then he sent back the treatment for the video. And we were like, oh, dude, you really nailed the Pinterest board. And he goes, oh, I didn't see a Pinterest board. So it was just like,
he just gets vibes already.
He
just nailed it.
Tom is amazing like that. Tom used to do all of our work for Junior Theatre Festival New Zealand.
Oh, I did not.
And so he would literally come in and film the festival over 2 days. Mm. And then he'd come back to me a few days later and go, right, based on what these people all said, this is our narrative for our video for the festival this year. And some of the ones you came up with. Has his brother interviewed you guys for 10,000 Dreams?
I've done a few,
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
Have you heard of 10,000 Dreams, Marsh?
I have not.
So what that is Tom Groot's brother, Fraser, is doing this project called 10,000 Dreams. And basically the plan was to record 10,000 people. It was going to take him the time it would take to pay a mortgage, 30 years. And he's done the most amazing people, including people like Michelle Obama and like amazing people.
I have seen this.
He did Elmo as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
He just does really like normal people. I'm one of them. I'm a normal person.
I think I've seen Stephen on that one as well.
Yeah, Stephen's done one. I've done one. And then he does famous people as well. And, like, he's up to nearly 4,500.
Is he really?
Yeah. Because he's been doing it for, like, 5 years.
Yeah, I've seen him. He's always, like, super manic when he's doing it because he's got, like, 10 other dreams to get to that day.
Mm.
He's insane.
It's very cool. Yeah. So who does all your publicity?
That would be my producer, Charlie.
Well, that's cool. So you've got something really cool with this particular show.
Yes, and it was a collab idea between Marshall and I, sort of just after we first met, really. So something that both of us share is a love of Kay Road and a love of, like, just all the excellent Kay Road haunts and businesses that anybody who's grown up in Auckland will know really well. And Marshall in particular reached out to God, is it 28 different businesses? 28 different businesses on K Road and have put together the Decadent K Road Night Out giveaway. So if you purchase a ticket to Decadence opening next Thursday, you automatically go in the draw to win this giveaway prize pack, which is valued at up to $2,000.
Holy moly, that makes
sense. Where do I enter?
Can I just also, here's some of the things that are in this, okay? We've got hotel stays, we've got dinner and drinks, we've got sex toys, we've got tattoos, $200 tattoo vouchers.
Oh, wow.
Clothing vouchers. And most importantly, 12 pies.
12 pies?
12 pies.
12
now
pies.
We're talking.
Yeah.
That would be three each.
No, that would be just like all for me. I'm the only one that said I'd enter, all right? Yeah. 12 pies straight in my
stomach. You're all over
that
it.
That is in the terms and conditions. The pies must be consumed by the person who purchases the ticket.
Amazing. There we go.
And they have,
guys,
to film it.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's so cool. Well, that should really encourage people even more so, apart from coming to see a really great sketch comedy show.
It's huge. I'm very jealous. I want this. Like, for example, the tattoo voucher is with Bruce Tattoos, which I've been, like, following forever. Would love to, like, get more cringy tattoos all over my body.
Yeah.
It's huge. I'm very envious.
Yeah, I mean, that's so cool that K Road has supported you that much.
It was really, honestly, it was really easy. There was maybe only one business that was like, no, and I think it was just because they struggled with the concept of emails. They were like, I know how to respond, email, ouch, brain.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
So have you guys ever reached out to people to give you stuff?
Probably.
We've done, I think so.
We've done some giveaways. We recently did a giveaway with the QT for a stay. It was the New Romance giveaway, and they got a stay at the QT, and I think like breakfast in bed, drinks at the bar, and dinner or something. Ooh. Nothing as crazy as this K Road thing, which is, sounds amazing, and I'm going to enter that straight away. But yeah, it was
really
fun.
You got to buy a ticket to the show.
Yeah, certainly. I was going to anyway.
Nice save.
Good one.
Nice save. So, Marshall, tell us, how long has it taken you to create this piece?
Oh, God, do I be honest or do I...
You're still creating it, right?
I literally am going to be going home tonight and try to finish more things about the Briscoe's Lady. I'm losing my mind. Like, if I am being honest, I just think winter plus having done two other versions of the show, like, it is pulling blood from a stone trying to be funny. Like, there is no joy in the air. Nothing is good. The world is horrible. We should all just drown in the ocean. The fact that I've managed to pull out what I've managed to pull out from it blows my mind.
I wish you guys could see the look on Emma's face right
Everyone
now.
Is horrified.
I'm just saying, as his producer, I am crying in the corner. It will be funny. It will be joyous. And Marshall is an excellent sketch comedian on stage. Like, he has this infectious energy when you see him live, which is awesome. But right now, he is just sitting here trying to make that happen, and he will make it happen on Thursday, won't you,
Marshall?
See,
I was sitting here trying to process whether this was comedy in itself, that you were talking like this, which was actually kind of like a psychological... For
I know,
us.
All are laughing, so it's true. Obviously true. A fantastic comedian. Yeah.
It is
cry
a cry for help. No, it's like, it is very... I think it's just hard sometimes. Like, for me, with sketch comedy, I have to find the silly first. So, for example, like, I don't have anything particularly political in the show. Political stuff is extremely hard because as soon as you touch any of it, people kind of, like, switch off a little bit, their shoulders droop, and they just, you know. So, if you are going to do that kind of stuff, or deep, dark stuff, you just have to be, like, stupid, stupid, silly. Like, find the dumbest possible thing you can, and then trick people, basically, into, like, at the end of the sketch, like, oh, that was actually about the cost of living, or whatever. It is probably my most silly show, so maybe I'm not doing a great job at selling it, but that's why my producer's here.
That's totally fine. Tell us, Borderline, what is the thing that financially, thinking of cost of living and things, what is the thing that you find the hardest as a young New Zealand band?
Touring.
I can answer for Matt, and that's guitar strings.
Yeah. Guitar strings.
I break so many guitar strings. I don't know what to do.
It's so bad. Like, it's really. We take two spare guitars for him, and if we're playing on stage and he's already broken two, like on each guitar, I'll have to trade him my guitar because he's better than me. So he gets the six string guitar, and I have to play with the Matt broken guitar.
Yeah,
there you go.
Honestly, it's like $30 for a pack of strings. I changed them on my guitar the other day, and after 2 days, I broke one. And that keeps happening. It's so expensive.
Is this because you play hard, or what is it?
Yeah, but...
Or is it that you tighten too much when you're tuning?
It's kind of a sick endorsement of, like, your playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it just can't handle the source.
Well, but it's become expected for him to break one.
I have heard that K Road are really good at giving things. So maybe you need to go to the rock shop on K Road and say that you've been on here and you've heard about the Decadence pack and that you think that maybe because you shared this time together that they should chuck you a few packs of strings.
No strings attached.
See, we're trying to give you material here.
Thank you. I actually need it right now. Thank you.
Okay, so strings.
Yes.
Touring. The cost of getting to places or the cost of hiring venues or everything?
Everything. I mean, even just like on the travel side of things, there's four of us.
And your boys.
And we're boys.
Which means you eat tons.
Yeah, and we travel with our front of house engineer and then also a tour manager. So there's six of us. And I think between us, there's like how many checking bags?
Have 14 checking bags at 14. The airport
for any given flight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Most of them oversized too.
Yeah. Oh. So they're all expensive.
So in New Zealand, if you are listening,
yes,
they're not based on K Road though, so don't get your hopes up.
Yeah, that's true.
They're kind of based everywhere, like in the sky.
They probably go over K Road at some point.
When you fly together on an international flight, do you guys try and get like four seats together or do you scramble all over the plane?
This is terrible.
There's a story, I can tell.
This is really bad. I think we went on like...
Does
like,
one of you pay for extra legroom and the rest don't? Like,
there's another story coming. Okay. So I somehow always get the middle seat. Like every single flight we take, we went to America and then England and then Australia. And in total, it was like 15 flights. And every single damn flight, I was in a middle seat until we flew from, I think, England to Paris, which was like
an hour,
which is
less than
honestly, it was like half an hour. Finally, I got an aisle seat for the shortest flight that I've ever been on in my entire life.
Salt in the wound.
Yeah, it was terrible. And then with the legroom thing, which is even worse, we were all like sick as a dog coming back from America. I don't know, we caught something, but Jackson was fine. And he got offered a sky couch, and he took it and didn't give it to the sick guy.
He had a strep throat, and he was like, we were out.
We were like struggling to sleep on these planes, and Jackson's just laying with like three seats of room. You know what? On this plane.
Ben was so sick, he wasn't even allowed on the plane. He had to stay an extra few days in LA.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It was wild.
But I hope you enjoyed that leg room.
Oh, man, I slept so good.
Well, my question would be, obviously, because you've got a tour person, they're making the booking, right? But you need to get the booking reference and jump on and change your seat.
I know, yeah, well...
It's easy enough to do.
It is quite tricky, though, because... Again, the budget thing is the main reason we don't have legroom, and he just got offered the upgrade.
Yeah, but I mean, for you in the middle seat, like you can jump on and change your seat.
You can also like be very sad at checkout, and you can do a lot of gaslighting and manipulation.
Coerce your way in there, yeah.
Yeah, guilt trip them, absolutely. Unfortunately, it's a bit of a alphabetical thing because they'll often book the first four. You could legally change your name. Because we go. Jackson always go. The tallest guy gets the window seat with the lowest ceiling, and then Ben ends up on the second. Then I'm lucky. I always get the aisle seat, and then Matt will be the next one over.
I do
middle seats mostly, but I've been lucky a couple times.
Marshall, do you have a favourite seat on the plane? Are you an aisle, a window, or a middle person?
That's where this conversation's going. Yeah.
I need to be aisle because I am up and around all of the time. But I will put my hand up for the person that can, like, you know, when they're like, oh, is anyone good at listening to instructions where they can do emergency exit stuff? I always put my hand up. Do not listen to a thing. But
that's reassuring.
I get that leg. Oh, yeah, no, do not fly with me.
But you've got that leg room.
So if I'm on a plane and I see you, I'm getting off.
Get off the plane.
Well, the thing is, I'm one of those people, too, that I love the window seat because then you can kind of lean on it.
Yeah, you can sleep.
But I get really nervous about waking or annoying the people beside me. So then I end up doing like a long-haul flight for 13 hours and don't go to the toilet.
See, I'm not worried about that because I've just climb over these dudes in their sleep and they'll just sleep right through.
But do you sleep on planes?
Sometimes.
Because I don't think I've gotten a wink of sleep on a plane on like
any
of our tours.
What's the longest flight you've taken?
We did, I think, the longest commercial flight, right?
Yeah, Auckland to New York.
Yeah, 19 hours.
The longer one was London to Perth.
No, London to Perth was brutal. It was like 18 hours or something.
You didn't sleep.
No.
Melatonin.
Oh, my God. I have so much melatonin.
Well.
I've struggled with sleeping on flights, too, but recently. Oh, melatonin. It's so easy to get in the States, so I brought back so much. And I've been having so much on flights and sleeping like an angel. It's amazing.
Don't worry about that, Air New Zealand.
That immigration doesn't listen to this podcast.
Oh, hey, it's becoming available over the counter soon.
We're not smuggling it over. You can take it on the flights.
I brought like four of those.
Like 300
things you
can
be smuggling.
In LA in the airport, they sell like those sleep.
Vodka?
The sleep. Yeah, vodka, yeah. Great. But the melatonin by the bottle, you know, that's about, you know, and you guzzle it as you get on. And I think I brought four of them home and I declared it, and that was fine. I wasn't like bringing in a case of 100.
I didn't sell them when he got back here, you know?
No.
Yeah. No.
No. No.
That felt very convincing.
All right. So we've got to keep moving on now. We're kind of over planes. Did you get any material there, Marshall?
No, I did not.
Did you get the motivation to write more material?
Yes, it made me think funny needs to happen and it needs to happen now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does funny happen, like, do you need to be in a specific kind of atmosphere or do you need to have a few drinks first?
Like, I try to be in public, like I try to go to public places. Because just looking at someone's face or something will just spark. I'll be like, oh, my God, they look insane. And then also the shower. Everything happens in the shower kind of thing. So I...
Sorry, that made me laugh.
Emma.
Well,
I start from a place of voices. Like if, you know, some kind of like sound or voice or something. And then I'll spiral from there and write all that down. What does that person sound like? What do they do?
Is that where the Briscoe's Lady one came from?
To be honest, the Briscoe's Lady one was a little bit cheap for me. I was like, if I do Briscoe's Lady, people will love it no matter what. And in the previous show, she did go pretty dark. She was, she had a bit of an unhinged unraveling in that one. So this one, I've changed it up. She's a lot more bright and bubbly. She does still turn 32 feet tall and crush people like she does in the commercials, but yeah.
Wow.
I love to see her. Is that like a lighting effect or something? Or
no, it's just in your body.
It just grows.
Yeah, you just...
Cool. Gotcha.
You never buy better.
No.
You guys can't see, but he actually just grew like 30 feet and went through the ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, in the basement theatre, it would actually be really hard to grow 30 feet because that roof is actually really
low. It's so small.
It's very tiny. It's very tiny.
Are you in what part of the, are you in the main theatre?
No, I'm in the, what's it called? The studio space, yeah.
Which is even smaller.
Yeah, it's like 80 people, 60 people?
It's about 63. The ceiling's higher in the studio, which is specifically for the Briscoe's Lady, I think. That was part of the choice, right? But yeah, it's a nice intimate space. You'll really get to know her really, really well.
Because I reckon if I interviewed people that had been to the basement main theatre, I reckon that there would hardly be anyone that hasn't hit their head in one of those back rows or hit the sprinkler. I've done that before where I've stood up and not realised that, the little sprinkler.
I shouldn't be like spilling all of their tea, but they also have a section of the bleachers where that is just a gap. So if you keep walking, you will fall and may die. If you come to my show, Decadence.
You may die. Okay.
Some great promo.
This is taking a turn. My God.
So we've talked about, at least, you know, we've talked about being on the plane and all sorts of things.
How did we get here?
I don't know. Coming back over this way. So, guys, when you're up for your first, what would the, is it a TUI? No, what's the New Zealand award?
There are TUIs.
There's TUIs, yeah. And what's another really big New Zealand, big maybe not New Zealand, but a music award? What would it be?
A Grammy.
A Grammy, yeah, okay. So I'm going to ask each of you who in your 15, because you get about 30 seconds total, so you're going to get about 7 seconds each. Who are you thanking? Let's start down this end and come along. Right. So, yay, Borderline! Woo! And
I think I'll do the Snoop Dogg thing and thank me.
Cool, okay, fair enough.
I'll thank my mum and dad.
Yep. And your girlfriend.
And my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
The shirt already says that, though, doesn't
okay,
it?
Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that one's at the Grammys.
This was at, this is the fit for the Grammys.
He wears the blazer over it, of course, but...
Nice.
I'd probably thank Ed Sheeran, you know, for sparking all the inspiration.
You know, thank my family, all the people around me, and a big thank to New Zealand Radio, you know, NZ On Air and, you know, community radio and how supportive they are of
Kick
local
arts.
Artists. Kick arts.
Okay, suck up.
So, have you been nominated for any awards yet? Or is that an awkward conversation?
Unfortunately, we didn't meet the criteria of, like, when we released things. So I think we...
Is there actual criteria?
Yeah, it's something like you have to release 3 singles in the time period. But we were, at the time, working on the EP, and the EP only had 2 singles.
Mm.
And the whole EP came out just after the AMAs. So hopefully this next upcoming AMAs will be eligible for nominations.
What about when you guys were at school? Like, were you part of the whole smoke-free Rock Quest thing and that buzz?
Yeah, this is a
it's a touchy subject.
Yeah, so Ben did it with his sister in the solo duo category.
And I won it.
They won. And then we did it with Ben the next year. And we were like, oh, okay, sweet. So this guy's won, so we'll be sweet. We'll breeze right through this. It's going to be easy. And
you didn't win.
We didn't even... We lost.
We came last. Yeah, we lost.
Literally last. We got out of the first round that you could possibly get out of, and it was 12 bands playing, and 10 got through.
And we didn't.
Wow.
Yeah. Which...
Oh, my God.
Was just insane. And I thought I was the problem, because I'd won it the year before, but I thought it must have been my sister that won it for us, you know? And these guys thought that it was their fault, because I'd won it last year, and it must be them. And we kind of just never really talked about it. We just kept going.
Yeah. But it's quite funny because I think it was the next year or the year after that we were the guest band at the finals for Rockquest. So that was cool. Yeah. It was like a nice
full circle.
Really full circle thing.
And I think Ben said something on stage. He was like, you know, we didn't even get past the heats, and so you guys are already doing so much better than we've done. So it's not about who wins. And it was very inspirational and very cute.
I felt quite bad afterwards though, because it's while they're judging that the guest band plays.
Yeah.
And on stage I said, hey, if you don't get through, you know, we didn't get through, and they're watching us sort of, you know, maybe thinking they're quite good, you know, these guys are quite experienced. And then I said, we didn't get through. So I probably made them all so nervous. But
and the bar's high.
Yeah, I know. No. But no, I felt terrible because I thought I'd made them lose hope.
Aww.
That they might get through.
It is really cool though how that platform sets up so many Kiwi artists.
It is awesome. It's a great thing. I think we have no regrets that we did it, even though we, you know, didn't make it through. We met so many cool people. Don't
Yeah.
Very cool. Have you done awards?
Yes, I just won the 2025 New Zealand Fringe International Exchange Award.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Is that because you're from over there?
No, it means that someone from an international fringe was at the New Zealand Fringe and saw that and was like, we'll bring you to our fringe.
Huh, and is that why you're going to Mexico?
Yes, that's why I'm going to, the San Diego Fringe.
That's so cool.
It was amazing, yeah, because the show just kind of built in ticket sales during Fringe till it was nearly sold out. And it was a really nice surprise.
Very cool. Look, we could talk to you guys for so long, but I've just looked at the time.
We're just about out of it.
We are just about out of it. So we're going to just go. First of all, you're going to sell us your show, and you're going to do it as one of your characters in the show, any. If there's more than one, I don't know. But tell us, where can people get tickets, find out more about you, enter the decadence draw?
You can buy tickets at MarshallLorenzo.com. That was the third property brother, his email.
Okay, well, that got a laugh. That was a good laugh.
There
okay.
was a proper eye contact that entire time, like a laser beam as well.
Because I was like, why did I choose that character?
I love it. So, in case you couldn't understand that emo accent, we're going to Marshall.Lorenzo?
MarshallLorenzo.com. So it's three L's in the middle.
Cool. All right, and you can get tickets there. Or, of course, you could probably jump on the Basement
website
as well.
You can also go to Basement, and that's how you go into the draw to win that $2,000 Kanangapi Road prize.
And you can also jump on Kick Arts event page, because it's listed there.
Whoa.
Okay, well, how can people find out about your tour and get tickets for you guys, Borderline?
Well, we're all over socials at Who is Borderline. That's the socials handle. And then you can get tickets at the Live Nation website. So, Live Nation New Zealand, Live Nation Australia, or at our website, which is whoisborderline.com, I believe. So
I think so.
Whoisborderline.com. Well, it's the four of you.
The four of
it
us.
Certainly is.
Quit, problem solved.
There we go. Now, we are going to play out your interview with another song by you guys. It's your latest one.
Yeah, it's the lead single off the EP.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about this.
This is a song called Breakdown. We wrote this with a good friend of ours, Pierre Beasley, from a band called Bar La Brigada, who are also from here. Yeah, it's great fun, super funky, super groovy.
Yeah, we recorded it at Roundhead Studios, which some people might know. It was a ton of fun, and yeah, it's one of our favorites to play live. So if you like it now, come see the show, and it's even better when we play it live.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Marshall, for coming back for a second time. We look forward to having you another time with your new characters. You guys, all the best for your tour.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot.
And who wants to introduce the song before we hit play?
I will. This is Breakdown by Borderline.
You're into this, whatever the feeling is. Inevitability, girl, you gotta hold. So when I'm all alone and you're not here to hold, I feel it coming on. Maybe I've had enough, so just stop falling. I need to be all in. Everything I've been lying on is anything that you're part of. Searching low and high. Oh, baby, I just can't find the thing. You know that you're my everything, give anything to bring you back again. You took every corner of my mind. I wanna be with you all the time. So when you're all alone, did you ever think of what could have been love? Baby, our time is up, so just stop falling. Oh, honey, to me. Searching low and high.
Wow, that was Borderline. Cool. All right. Well, now we are crossing over to our next guest, who is phoning in from Ponaki. So, good evening, Emma.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Hey, no worries at all. So, tell us about Declaration of Love.
Yes, so it is the 5-year anniversary of a show me and my bestie Hamish Boyle put on for Fringe 2020, and it is coming back to Bats in Wellington in about a week and a half. It is a sketch show, 17 sketches, all about love stories. We're telling a lot of love stories on stage.
So happy love stories, sad love stories, comedy, what, a bit of everything.
I think the existence of love can be both positive and negative, but the vast majority of them are very funny.
Cool. And so has this been written by both of you? Like, how's this process worked?
I wrote about 3/4 of it. Hamish and I shared some of the sketches, and then he's written a couple himself.
Cool. Now, you're the producer as well, aren't you?
I'm doing most of the work, yes.
And that's under Tempest?
Yes, my theatre company.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've been sending so much our way. Like, you're clearly a very, very busy person.
I think this is show number 38 of the year.
What? Like, yeah, I've got our next guests are sitting listening to this interview at the moment, and their faces, if you could see them, because they come from a theatre company that does 6 to 8 shows a year, and 38. Like, how the heck do you do that?
I didn't produce them all. Like, I didn't feature in all of them. I did quite a lot of shows over Fringe and mm-hmm. also quite a lot of shows over the Comedy Festival. So those are all counted in the 38. My company has done, I think, 3 projects this year. I'm mostly just brought onto other projects.
Right. And I suppose, though, when you're producing, if you've got multiple projects on, because a lot of the work would be, without trying to diminish it, but a semi-rinse and repeat, right? Once you've got your schedules and you kind of know I need to do ABC.
It really depends on what it is, I think, because this is the first proper theatre show I've done in quite a while. We do quite a lot of digital work, we do a lot of improv, we do a lot of radio. So it sort of depends on what the thing is, if I'm honest.
Right. So tell us, what will people expect if they come to Declaration of Love?
It is a lot of pastiches, a lot of parodies. We do some parodies of Mission Impossible, of 50 Shades of Grey, of things like that. So those are the more recognisable ones. And then we just delve into exploring love, what actors think about love, about flatmates falling in love with each other. There's a couple of slightly darker ones. There's a big play on Shorten Street. Lots and lots of silly interrogations of love.
That's really cute.
It's a delight to perform. I really enjoy it.
And who are you kind of marketing this towards?
Oh, I think anyone who wants to feel their heart a little warmed up in the middle of winter. It is a very warming show. And I think it is pretty broad in terms of audience. Like, generally, women like it more because they maybe have a reference of romance novels and things like that. But it is broad in terms of its audience.
Cool. And what other things are you working on at the moment? What else is in your 38 kit?
So I am currently working on the New Zealand Improv Festival, which is coming up in about a month and a half time. I'm also working on the New Zealand Solo Theatre Festival, Tahi, which is coming up in about a month. And then some projects down the pipeline in October and November.
Why do you think it is that all the New Zealand festivals or happen in Wellington? Is it because it's our capital?
I don't know. I think it's just Wellington artists are really into making festivals. I mean, I would love for them to be more in Auckland, more in Christchurch, but yeah, a lot of people I know move to Wellington, get quite into the arts, and then just decide to start making festivals.
What do you think's your biggest challenge as a producer?
Getting people to do things. I know that sounds quite mean, but often the artist's life is very fraught and very busy, and it can be often quite hard to get people to stick to deadlines, which is unfortunate, but I understand it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes you have to email like 4 or 5 times to get the one thing right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy. So, is it just that you've been doing this for a while now and you're getting that reputation down there, or what do you think it is that makes people come to you and say, can you please?
I am known as a jack of all trades. I think that's the main thing. The only thing I don't do in theatre is set design.
Mm-hmm.
And I have quite niche knowledge that a lot of people don't know. Like, there was a show I was doing across the month of June up the coast where they called me in to do it solely because they knew I could learn how to use their lighting board that no one else in the region knew how to use. So there's things like that.
That's crazy, but totally get that.
just like I know a lot of people, and people seem to think that I am good enough to work with that they call upon me in their time of need, which means a lot. It really does.
Was it your plan to always be what you're doing now?
I left high school planning to be a professional actor, and of course went into university and realised that that's quite untenable for a lot of people. So as I went through my bachelor's and my master's, I discovered that I'm quite into theatrical operation and I'm quite into theatre technology. So that's sort of where I find most of my work these days. But I still love, love, love acting.
I mean, and that would probably be an important thing for a lot of emerging artists to realise that if you want to be in this industry in New Zealand and being paid to do it, you do have to be the jack of all trades, don't you?
I mean, honestly, I have friends who are making it work solely professionally acting, but it is so hard because we don't have that large an industry and there's a lot of competition.
Yeah.
So I always say to people, diversify, find the thing you love, but also find the thing that you could live with doing.
Fair enough, totally. So out of these 38 things you've done this year, have you got a favourite?
Honestly, I have to say Decorations, and not just because it's coming up. It's like I came out of rehearsal at 9 p.m. last night buzzing because I just spent 3 hours spending time with my best friend, having a lot of physical contact and performing with him. And I think that's just delightful.
Yeah, but I mean, is there challenges performing with a friend?
I think at this point we trust each other enough that, because we're predominantly directing ourselves, we have a facilitator, but we are directing ourselves. The fact that we have worked together so much, we trust each other so much that it's very rarely an issue. Because there is open lines of communication. I think there's a lot of people I wouldn't do this show with, but I'm pleased I'm doing it with him.
Fantastic. Very cool. And when you say you've got a facilitator, is that like someone watching you, or is that intimacy coordination or a bit of everything?
No, she comes in and does sort of an outside eye. She said to us yesterday that she's basically like minding us because we're a bit like Labradors when we leave to our own devices.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing when you're directing yourself or performing yourself, isn't it? That you'd kind of do need that to stay on track and not get distracted.
Mm. Absolutely, because, I mean, we are doing our own intimacy direction as well because we have that relationship and we're both trained in it. But being able to have someone say from the outside, your hand placement looks weird, or do something differently is always very useful.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so tell us, when is it on and where is it on and how do people get their tickets?
So Declarations of Love and Other Useless Things is on at Bats Theatre here in Wellington from the 26th to the 30th of August. Tickets can be picked up at bats.co.nz. It is a duo comedy sketch show featuring myself and Hamish Boyle, who is an Auckland-based actor down in Wellington for the duration of the show.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much again to Tempest for your ongoing support of Kick Arts. We love getting your emails telling us that things are coming up and having the opportunity to find out a little bit more about what's happening outside of Tamaki Makaurau.
We're really hoping to bring this show to Tamaki next year, fingers crossed.
Amazing. Well, if you do, you'll be able to come in studio and talk about it.
Yes, we'd love to. Thank you so much for having me.
No worries, and thanks for coming on a Sunday night.
Cheers.
All right, well, now we're on to our next two guests who have snuck into the studio while that was going on. So, from Dolphin Studios' season of Red, We've got Mike and Christoph. Kia ora, guys.
Hey, hey.
Kia ora, good to be here.
So tell us, Mike, let's start with you. Are you guys, it's just you two in the show, right?
So Christoph's directing, and so it's a two-hander. It's myself and Max Easy are the only ones on stage. We're both pretty much on stage the whole show. So
crazy.
Nobody gets a break.
So, Christoph, what made you decide this show?
It was, I'd been looking around for a few different scripts to try and find one that was right for both Dolphin Studio, but also that kind of snagged me, that made me go, yes, I really want to put the time and effort into this. With Red, I think that the exploration of art and truth came through in a way that just felt deeply human.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of connected with this really flawed character who believed in art but really didn't maybe believe in people anymore. And then his worldview got challenged.
So, Mike, tell us a little bit about when we say the Dolphin Studio.
Hmm.
What is the difference between the Dolphin Studio and the Dolphin Theatre?
Yeah, the studio is it's actually a new initiative that we've put forward this year. So this is our second go-around under the studio banner. Basically, you know, we do six shows a year, what we now refer to as the main stage shows. And we sort of have a couple of gaps in the calendar where we were sort of looking, oh, you know, it'd be nice to sort of fit something else in that is, you know, on the one hand, like smaller, like small cast, low tech, you know, not a lot of elaborate props and set pieces and that kind of thing. But also, it's an opportunity for us to sort of dive into some more challenging material, something a little more diverse, and the kinds of shows that we think are really interesting and really have a lot of artistic merit, but, you know, maybe aren't the best fit for 2.5 weeks on the Dolphin stage. But, you know, for 5 nights, you know, in between here, like it actually, you know, we can kind of pack them in a smaller run. So that's what this is. Like I said, it's our second studio effort for the year. The first one was earlier the year in April. It was a show called The Secret Lives of Extremely Old People, which was based on actual interviews with 90-year-old Kiwis. And it was really lovely. The playwright came up to see the final closing night show and did Q&A. And it was really, really lovely show. And so we were looking for something, you know, that was kind of, I wouldn't say it was light, because it certainly challenged some ideas about aging and whatnot, but, you know, generally it was kind of an upbeat, happy, kind of positive outlook on life kind of show. So we were looking to do something, you know, a little more challenging this time around. And it actually, we were just talking beforehand, but, you know, the show really kind of came together quite suddenly and quite beautifully. Mm-hmm. We were originally had a different show lined up to fill this slot and basically ran into some roadblocks with getting the rights sorted. And by the time we had them sorted, it kind of other things had fallen apart. And so we had to suddenly, very quickly, find a new show. So I turned to Christoph because, you know, he's someone that we've been looking to sort of bring into Dolphin for quite some time. And he and I had been looking for something to do together for a while and sort of trying to find the right piece. And he suggested Red, and it just sort of was like, yeah, this is perfect. This is exactly what we need. And so, it all just kind of blasted off from there. And it's been super fun and super rewarding and really remarkably stress-free for something that kind of came together very, you know, a little bit last minute. It's been, like, pretty smooth sailing, honestly.
We were just talking about this before. It's been unusually, everyone just turned up and did their work, whether that was the cast or whether that was the people behind the scenes. I felt really underpinned with a lot of great support from the Dolphin team on this one, and the results are there for it.
Awesome. Because normally we find you across with Company.
Yes, I've done a lot of stuff with Company.
Mm.
But I've always done stuff with theatre companies across Auckland. This is my first chance that I've had to direct for Dolphin, and I'm really glad that I'm able to do it with Mike. Mike and I both act and direct, so we were looking for projects to where either he's directing and I'm acting or vice versa. This is how it's worked out, with Mike playing the lead in Red, Mark Rothko, the abstract impressionist. master, and yeah, I couldn't be more pleased.
So what would you, if you had to put a genre on this show, what does it come under?
It's a drama.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, it's definitely a drama.
Yeah, it's like, I was going to say, it's like those lovely, those, you know, every Oscar season, there's always that kind of like that biopic, like, you know, this great artist or great musician, you don't know the full story of their life kind of thing. It's kind of like one of those, but it's also, because, you know, it is this real person, you know, Mark Rothko, who's this unbelievable painter. But it's also my favorite version of those kinds of stories, which is not here's his whole life from the moment he was born till the moment he died. It's like here's one little slice of his life that is particularly interesting and kind of, you know, works as a kind of microcosm of the big picture. So this is the story of Red is specifically around Mark Rothko. He was commissioned to do these large murals for the opening of the Four Seasons restaurant in New York. When the building first opened, the building was called the Seagram Building, so it was called the Seagram Murals. And so he was commissioned, it was $35,000, which was more than any painter had ever been commissioned to do anything at that point, basically. And he spent 2 years putting these paintings together. And, you know, what ends up happening, I won't spoil the show, but what ends up happening is quite interesting. And so the way the play works is it's basically Rothko and a sort of fictionalized version of his assistant during those 2 years that he worked on those paintings. And they sort of grapple with, you know, the artistic process and the value of art and tragedy and why people do what they do. And they talk about all these other great painters, and it's really deeply moving, and it's really deeply like personal. It really gets under the skin of who this guy is. And I always, the thing that we've found so much in rehearsal is that, like, first of all, so much of the dialogue I have discovered is like lifted direct quotes from Rothko.
Right.
Like, so all of the most quotable lines are things that he actually said in life. You know, there's so much of that. Like, it's, you know, that, like that onion, you just keep peeling back layers, and they say something in scene one, and then it really pays off in scene five. And if you're paying attention, you'll see all those connections and all these threads that kind of get woven straight through. The script is just so incredibly strong. It blows me away.
Beautifully crafted.
And are you a painter at all?
No.
So do you have to paint it all in this play?
Well, so it's interesting. In the show, there is a scene, sort of a kind of big centerpiece scene where traditionally, yes, they actually sort of paint this thing, this big mural on stage. You know, as sort of our sort of spin as the studio is, it's a little more, I won't say how we're doing it, but it's a little more abstract. It's a little more expressionist, if you will, in sort of how we're executing that movement. I think it's really visually interesting. I think, and it actually, because of the way we're doing it, it actually allows us to stage that moment in a way that is literally the exact opposite of how you would normally do it.
Yeah.
So instead of sort of focusing on the sort of painting being created, and, you know, instead you'll sort of get to see us in the moment creating that painting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of flips the audience's
yeah.
point of view to the characters, I think, instead of to the visual spectacle.
It's one of those fun things where you have to kind of look at a show and go, okay, this is not a professional theater company with a massive budget.
Yeah.
How are we going to make this
Yeah,
this
we can't paint
work?
A mural every night. How do we do this without, you know, painting a 6-foot mural every night? You know what I mean?
So. Yeah.
Which actually is giving us some fun artistic opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how much research did you have to do into this, the life of this painter?
Yeah, quite a bit, actually, because I...
Did you know much about him before?
No, I didn't know very much about Mark Rothko at all before. I just loved the script, so then I did a big deep dive, and I also had to... play name checks a lot of different, like, huge artists. And while I, you know, picked up the general thing like most people do, I never did art history or anything like that. So I actually went through at the beginning of this process and built out a big visual guide to all the different artists that were mentioned. And Rothko's stuff as well, shared that with the crew and the, because you want the actors to be able to have in mind what they're speaking about when they're
definitely.
Yeah, and it really has made a huge difference, because you sort of read through it and they go, oh yeah, they're talking about this painting or that painting or whatever. And then when when you actually see the painting and then you have that in your head, so then when they talk about it on stage, it's like you're thinking about the little individual details that you've picked up while you're looking at it. Mm. And obviously that's, you know, we want the audience to have that experience as well. So, you know, we'll have, you know, reproductions of all of those paintings in the foyer so that when people come in to see the show, they'll be able to kind of browse through some of those paintings before they go in to see the show. And then when they come out at interval, they'll have a little more context and they can go, oh, this is that painting they were talking about. Oh, this is the sun, you know, the red sun, or this is the robe, and, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, we really trying to try and connect that visual language with the audience because, like I said, not everyone has an art history background, and being able to sort of make those visual, tangible connections, I think, really, really helps make the piece sing a little bit.
Mm. So. Mm. Okay. Is this your first show this year, Christoph, or is this...
Yes.
This is number one?
Yeah, number one. In fact, the last show I did was last year, actually, at the Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
Did Constellations at the Fringe.
Which was beautiful. I loved that show.
I was very, very privileged to work with the people I did. It was fantastic. The show ended up getting Best Direction at the Fringe, which was a real privilege. But yeah, first one for this year. I don't do a show every year, normally every couple of years, but this opportunity came up, as Mike was saying, kind of out of the blue, and been wanting to work with Dolphin for a while, been wanting to work with Mike for ages. The script is beautiful. We just went for it.
So you have a day job?
Yeah, I do. I'm a writer with New Zealand Health Group, so I'm working in the marketing department and, you know, writing stuff for health websites or ads to bring nurses into the country, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the theatre is the stuff that I'm super passionate about. You know, it's like the person you just had an interview with said earlier, you can't always kind of do the creative stuff as a full-time job, so you have to get in there and, you know, do what you need to do, and then you can do these amazing projects in your free time.
And writing is an important part of theatre anyway, so having that understanding of literature and how it all goes together and how to write well still is kind of... It kind of comes in, right?
Yeah, it's to do with storytelling as well, right? When that is, I feel like that is the tie-in with directing, right? It's about the structure, how you structure stories and how you evoke emotions in people.
Yeah, very much so. You've got a day job too, haven't you, Mike?
Oh, most of the time. So I work in TV and film usually, but on the sort of in the production office kind of end. So it's a lot of logistics. It's a lot of scheduling and making sure that actors are at their fittings and that kind of thing. But I sort of bounce from production to production. So I'm fortunate enough at the moment that I just finished a gig recently and I don't have another one lined up for a bit. So I've had a lot of time to learn a very dense and wordy script that involves me being on stage and listing a lot of very specific artists and paintings and pontificating on, you know, the theory of everything, basically.
Mm.
I've been very gracious to have the time to sort of to dedicate to that. But, you know, I'm also at the theater. I'm the current president of the Dolphin, so I'm there. I kind of live there at the moment. Our office admin has been away on holiday for the last few weeks, so I've been filling in for her during the day. So I just sort of live, eat, sleep, and breathe Dolphin these days. She comes back tomorrow. I'm very much looking forward to, you know, not being in there during 9 to 5 hours for a while. But it is also, you know, at the same time, though, I haven't been on the Dolphin stage in 6 years.
Well, you've been pretty busy with everything that has happened. What with the magnificent fundraising to introducing my two favorite nights with Tuesday treats and Wednesday
Tuesday
spin
treat nights.
And Wednesday spin the wheel. Now, is that going to be happening for this show?
So this show, like I said, it's a limited run. It's 5 performances over 4 days. So Wednesday. It's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday is a double show. There's a matinee and an evening show. So Tuesday
no
treats.
Tuesday or Wednesday.
This is no Tuesday. We open on a Wednesday, but we won't do the spin the wheel thing because we'll do other other things because it's opening night. So, I've been my daughter is just about a little over 6 years old, and the last show I did at Dolphin was right before, like literally right before she was born. Like I would go on every night and hand the stage manager my phone and say, "Okay, if the phone rings, please, you know, wave frantically from the wings," and I'd come off at interval and go, "Is my phone rung? No, okay," and I'd text my wife, "You know, no labor? Okay, great. I'm going to go back on for the second half." And my daughter was born about a couple weeks later. And so I haven't, right around that time, I sort of said, well, I'm not going to have a ton of time. I did like 4 or 5 shows that year or something like that. I said, I'm going to have to step back from being on stage all the time. And so it's just how I ended up getting involved on the committee and sort of doing a lot of the more organizational stuff at Dolphin. And these days we were just saying earlier, I really sort of try to pick and choose when I'm going to direct or act in a show. It's really got to be something that I feel really strongly about the material and sort of take the time away from the family and to dedicate a lot of focus to that. It's got to be something that really resonates with me in some way. So like I said, it's so fortunate that this show has sort of come along. It was the show I didn't expect and wasn't planning on doing this year, but it's been such a great time, and I'm so excited about it. I'm so excited to share it with people, and so we just really hope people will come along and watch, because I think they're going to be really impressed.
Awesome. Hey, let's take a quick music break now. So this is the latest track from Meg and Me called Find You.
Sometimes when I am overwhelmed and I've been keeping to myself, I reach for you. In these candy floss skies, with flares of orange and white, like wildfires way up high. Ooh, sometimes when I find it hard, it's hard to find you.
Well, it was hard to find them.
It was very hard.
Guys, yeah. It was so hard.
Yeah. Just in the break, I was asking about set design and things, because funny story about the Dolphin Theatre is quite often when their shows go on after opening night, I suddenly get all these texts saying, your set design was amazing, Emma. And I'm like, it's not me.
Yeah, we have a set designer whose name is also Emma Bishop. So people come in and they go, oh, Emma Bishop did the set. Oh, that's amazing. So yeah. Emma always is sort of like, hey, what's going on? What did I design this time?
So, no, it's very flattering.
Yeah. And she's very good. She's very good. So you should be very flattered. She is very good.
And I love designing sets. Yeah. You know, I've won a few awards through through Showdown Awards and things for set design. But it's always quite funny. So let's go back to the beginning. Christoph, what got you into theatre? Where did the bug catch?
Or bite? Yeah. It was in my teens, I think. I actually saw one of my old mates who I went to primary school with, and he was in the local paper. This is in Tauranga, and he was doing speech and drama. And I also saw that he was involved in community theatre, and I thought, I don't know, that looks fun. I'll give that a go. Did a bit of community theatre in Tauranga, and then when I moved up to Auckland, one of the first things that I did in order to like meet people and get to know people was I'll plug myself into the local community theatre scene. In fact, the very first show I auditioned for up here in Auckland was a Dolphin show. I didn't get cast, but I then went on to do stuff with Shoreside Company, Te Rangi, Ellerslie, all over the city.
See, it says it all, because when you do go to a new place, I reckon that theatre is one of the best ways to get into a new community.
Yeah.
Joining a club or a society or, finding those like-minded people.
Those social hobbies, right?
Mm.
And it makes a real difference. I did meet a lot of cool people, some of whom I still consider my friends today. And, it's opened up so many cool opportunities.
Cool. What about you, Mike? Who kicked it off for you?
Oh, it would probably be my overwhelming lack of athletic prowess is probably what.
And yet you're wearing a Run the City.
I know. It's very misleading because I don't run the whole marathon. I run the smaller portion of the 11K, but I wear the jacket and it makes me look like I'm really good at running.
Run part of the city.
Yeah, I run a portion of the city, in parentheses. When I was a kid, everybody just did sports. That's like what kids did outside of school. And I did all of those sports and was very bad at all of them. I think it was around middle school when suddenly the school had, we do a play every year. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll try that. And really enjoyed it and sort of instantly went, oh, this feels different. This feels like something that I like might actually be good at, as well as like having a lot of fun. Mm. And then was fortunate that my parents kind of pushed me to go to a private high school, and sort of said, look, there are a bunch around, like you can sort of pick the one, find the one that works for you, that has the things that you want that are meaningful to you. And I found a school that had this really unbelievable theater program, had this gorgeous theater that was funded by Stephen King. He was named after his mother.
Yeah.
I don't think he's even an alumni, but he's from that part of the country. So it had this amazing, gorgeous theater that was like modeled after the Globe, and this incredible, incredible theater program. I mean, like my freshman year of high school, they did Noises Off and built the full rotating set, and like it was unbelievable. Kind of never looked back from there. And I went to university for acting and directing, and I kind of walked away from it for a number of years. Kind of similar to Christoph, where it's like, I went to school for that. I went to LA and I lived in LA for about 5 years and was doing some acting and stuff. And then it was a really weird couple of years to be in LA. It was during the previous big writer's strike, and SAG strike, which then immediately turned into the 2008 world financial collapse. So it was like everybody stopped doing everything for a while. And so I kind of, I went back, moved back east with my, you know, soon to be wife, and kind of stepped away from the arts and acting and theater and all that stuff for, you know, about 10 years or so. And when we moved here to New Zealand, which was just about 10 years ago, we moved here October of 2015. So one of the things, I wanted to go back to working in film and TV. And when we moved to Auckland, I sort of said, you know, I haven't been on stage in a really long time and I kind of miss it. And so I just started Googling around for auditions and, yeah, kind of stumbled into The Dolphin because the show they were doing at the time was, you know, it was an American set show. And I said, okay, well, I've got the accent, I'd probably do okay. And I just instantly fell in love with the place, you know, had a great time. The show was called Death of a Dream. And it was like a sort of, it was original work by Richard DeLuca, who's a local Kiwi. It's sort of a, like a sequel to Death of a Salesman, like same family, like two generations on. Had lovely people, lovely building, lovely place, and just had such a blast doing it that I immediately jumped into a one act, like went like right after that, and then jumped into another show like shortly thereafter.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. And my wife never saw me again.
Oh, yeah, well, we know what that's like. So, Christoph, I'm thinking about your bucket list of shows. What's your, if a producer was to walk in the door right now and kind of go, Christoph, come, and what would it be that would make you go, I'm running out that door?
Yeah, that's, I do have an answer for that, actually. I think there's a play that I was involved in a long time ago that I'd love to direct. It's called The Pillow Man by Martin McDonagh.
Yes, I know that. It's an amazing play. I think I saw it. It might have been at Auckland Theatre Company or a Silo Theatre or someone years ago did it in town. And wow.
So affecting. It's a play that doesn't let you sit easy.
No.
It gets in your face. It grabs you. It shakes you. But it's also really beautiful. In a lot of ways, and ultimately, even though a lot of really dark, messed up stuff happens across the course of it, it's also, one, quite funny throughout, but two, the themes are also quite meaningful and beautiful.
Do you think it's a community theatre type show, though?
I think it can be. I think that community theatre shouldn't restrict itself from those tougher...
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you can't do a full year's slate of that stuff. You know, you're not going to get enough people turning up. But as part of a mix, I believe
100%. Well, when you're 100%. Doing six shows, you definitely, you can have your kind of... It's a bit like Shoreside, isn't it, with their, you know, they always do their Agatha Christie, as one of their things.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of the philosophy that we've sort of embraced at Dolphin in the last couple of years is, you know, we do six shows, now we're doing eight shows with the studio, which is more than most community theaters do in Auckland.
Gotcha.
So we sort of have looked at it as, you know, we can find the space to say, okay, we're going to do an Agatha, we're going to do an Oscar Wilde, we're going to do a Shakespeare, and, you know, these things are sort of, you know, largely not guaranteed, but, you know, people will reliably come out to see them. And then that gives us the space to say, okay, well, that show's going to sell 80%, and that show's going to sell 70%. And then we can do this other show, and even if it doesn't sell as well, like, we think there's a lot of it. We love the script. We think the actors will really want to do it, and we think there's a lot of value to this kind of thing. And it's been, I think the results have kind of borne it out. Like, even, like I said, whether it sells or not, it's kind of besides the point to me. Like, I think the audience response has been really great. And we did just recently, earlier this year, we did kind of like a supporter survey with people. And we specifically were asking around, oh, you know, what are the types of shows you want us to see? You know, what are the types of things you might want us to see that we're not doing? And I was really gratified that a lot of the response was, well, the balance is really great. You know, you guys sort of have a different thing on all the time, which is great.
Yeah. Now we're coming to the end of our evening. So the selling point.
The selling point for Red.
Ooh. Well, like I said, I think the script is amazing. I think it's so tightly written. And I think it really does kind of get in down to sort of the foundations of, like, why art is important. You know what I mean? Mm. And it's not just about painting and visual art. I mean any form of art. So if you consider yourself an artist in any way, I think there's a lot to be mined from this. I won't say anything about myself, but Max Easy, who's my co-star on stage, is phenomenal. It's been really, really fun to work with him.
And Mike may not be saying anything about himself, but he is a powerhouse as Mark Rothko and has really transformed himself into this titanic, often arrogant, but deeply skilled figure.
Mm. It's really fun. It's really rich and it's really emotional. And if meaty dramas are your thing, this is the show to see right now.
Very cool. So where do people get their tickets?
You can go to dolphintheater.org.nz. You can find us right on the homepage there. Like I said, the show runs from Wednesday the 27th to Saturday the 30th of August. So it's a short run. So don't wait on it. Don't sleep on it. But tickets are on sale now. You can jump in and grab them. Only $25. So it's a pretty cheap ticket as well. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming out on a Sunday night. Thank you, Adam, for coming and joining me and keeping me company tonight.
Always good to be here.
Yeah. So remember, we're always looking for bookings and to schedule in, and we are booked up for the next few weeks, so don't wait until the last minute because we may not be able to fit you in. Send us a email at info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, to go out tonight, we are going out with Cora's latest track, Easy Now. So make sure you go out there and
kick some arts.
Like autumn leaves that fall to the floor. Take it easy, yeah. Through the cold at night. It's spring come around and we gon' do it all over again. Again, yeah. My little lion, coming rolling round the bend. A little higher, that every man can defend. Tell you once again that you should all come along. You could be the reason for the change in the season. Easy now, summer won't let me go. Like autumn leaves that fall to the floor. Take it easy, yeah. Through the cold at night, when spring come around, we gon' do it all over again. Only live life in an easy way. So when you're gray and old with a story to tell, recalling all the memories, the last season arrives to come take you away. Back to the beginning. Easy now, summer won't let me go. Like autumn leaves that fall to the floor. Take it easy. When spring come around, through the cold at night, gotta take it easy. Through the cold at night, oh, oh, spring come around, and we gon' do it all over again. We could get this season together, easy forever. We'll be right back.
teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 let's go kick some art.